Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
I'm Dr. Deborah.
Hi, it's Coach Kelly here.
So glad to be here and seeing you in person.
Yay!
Coach Kelly.
You're back.
Yeah, I'm back. Oh, I had just a wonderful, wonderful experience in Santa Fe. You know, they call New Mexico the Enchanted State. I don't know so much about the rest of the state, but Santa Fe is just such a beautiful place. The air is so clean and so crisp and so awesome that it just, I felt like magical. But it's really high up. It's like over 6,000 feet above sea level. So when you first get there, it's a little bit hard to breathe and catch your breath. You
know,
walking up and down the stairs,
the
altitude. Oh, it's wild. But went skiing,
did lots
of hiking, took lots of pictures, came face to face with a beautiful deer only about 5 feet away from me. Just like, he's like, what are you doing in my space? I'm like, sorry, buddy. I don't want to make you upset. You're awfully beautiful. I just want to observe how just lovely you are.
That's so sweet.
I guess it was probably a girl. She was just hanging out, just chewing away and eating her grass.
It didn't run away.
No. She just stood there. She just didn't like noise, but she was happy to just continue doing her thing.
I would have wanted to pet the deer. I would have tried to pet it.
Well,
I'm kidding.
I did want to. I was going to try to give it some food and stuff, but then thinking, what if she's
not
that friendly?
Exactly.
But yes, it was a wonderful time. So it's always hard after several days off to readjust and come back to traffic and
life,
smog and all that. But it was a good one. It was really lovely. It was much needed.
I'm sure. That's great. Well, we missed you here.
Yeah.
Tried to hold down the fort.
Well, that was a wild ride on our show last week, trying to do it remotely.
Totally wild ride. I was riding a Bronco by myself.
Poor thing.
So we had a little technical difficulties on last show, but
I had no idea actually when you could hear me and when you couldn't. So sometimes I was just talking, thinking that it was broadcasting.
I know. Well, what was funny was, you'd be talking, and then I guess you didn't hear me at points, and so you'd call back, and I'd be sort of in the middle of sort of the next topic, so it was hard to kind of come back together, because you didn't know where I left off, and I didn't know where you left off, so it was kind of a...
It was a bit crazy.
But you know what? This is a great opportunity for us to talk about
stress.
How to handle stress in that situation, or any situation. I mean, I think really what I tried to do was just to go with it. I think that's all you can do. Just kind of make the best of it in those situations.
It's one of those moments where it really makes sense to address that, where you have control and where you don't. Like, at a certain point, I just realized, this is just outside of my control. It's going to be exactly what it's going to be.
It's so
and there
true.
Isn't much that I can do about it, right?
Yep, exactly.
And that's when I actually started to calm down and self-regulate.
Yeah.
Because it was like, all right, I'm not at fault here. It's not, you know, it's just sort of life's energy that's just not working for us in this moment.
Completely. I think that's a great way to look at it. It's true. You sort of surrender and say, there's nothing else I can do on my end.
Absolutely.
And I think it did make it sort of funny. It was kind of humorous.
It was kind of funny.
You
afterwards,
know?
I was laughing like, whoa, I wonder.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, so if you were listening to us last week and it was also stressful for you since you didn't have the continuity of our voices in our interchange, please don't hold that against us. Just chalk it up to part of the universe having not cooperated with us technology-wise. It wasn't even a Mercury in retrograde, I don't believe.
That's interesting.
No, just was what it was.
Yeah, exactly.
Who knows? Hey, after all, it is you, the listener, who makes our show. So please feel free to call anytime during the show at 323-203-0815. Again, 323-203-0815. And please like us on Facebook and like us on Twitter and become followers. You know, makes our day. If I see even just one person clicked on it, I'm so excited.
Like,
it's really awesome. So yeah, please give us a call. And we know some of you are shy and will not want to call in. So you can always email us, because we do read those in between shows and we do go through many of those each show. Stress.
Oh.
We talked last week, we said, let's have a show about shame. But stress and shame have a lot of overlap that's really interesting, because people who carry a lot of shame carry more stress.
That makes sense.
The sense of, I am not okay who I am, I can't be okay in my own shoes, makes for a very stressful situation.
Oh, I'm sure. My God, I can't imagine the blood pressure of, you know, those type of people. Absolutely.
You seem like somebody who has never had shame.
Oh, I don't know about that. I don't know. I like the way you look at me, though. That's sweet. No, I mean, I think we all have a little bit. I mean, would you agree with that? On some level?
Well, shame. Okay, so let's distinguish shame from guilt, because I think they're really important distinguishers. Mm-hmm. Have you ever heard the difference?
No, I want to hear it from your point of view.
So from my point of view, shame is a much more primitive and earlier experience. It's the experience that we have, that we carry forward in our lives from earlier in childhood, like before age two, before we have language, because we then carry and absorb the world without boundaries. Mm-hmm. And when a child does something and mama looks at the child, the infant, and mm-hmm. looks scornfully at the child has no way to distinguish its being from its behavior. So later on, we can develop guilt. Guilt is, I did something wrong.
Yes.
So this was something I knew was not supposed to be done, and I did it, so mm-hmm. I'm guilty, which leads to a sense of remorse and hopefully an amends in behavior.
Sure.
But it's not about the person. Right. And shame is carrying around the sense of I'm worthless, I'm ugly,
yes.
I'm boring, there's something wrong with me, I don't deserve love. Mm-hmm. Those are shame experiences.
I see. So shame, basically you can't help it, because if you have shame, it's from when you were before you were two and there was nothing you could do about it, basically is what you're kind of saying.
I'm saying that's kind of where the foundation is laid. And so, you know, people who have very loving parents who are, you know, very mm-hmm. nurturing, engaging, they're going to not grow up with a whole lot of sense of shame, mm-hmm. some sense of something's wrong with me at the core of their being.
Yes.
Whereas people who grow up in abusive families or situations where there's neglect, or there's, you know, maybe if a parent suffers a tremendous amount of depression or mm-hmm. is going through a very stressful time and can't be as nurturing, warm, and loving, then those experiences get locked into the sense of self as defective.
That makes total sense. Yeah. And could shame and guilt, could shame be like, you know, I feel worthless, and guilt is I felt worthless? Like, it in some ways is guilt sort of in the past and shame is kind of more in the present?
I that's an interesting way to look at it. It could be. I see it more as a distinction between self and behavior.
Okay.
And guilt, like when you do, so you know, we all know when we're not supposed to be doing something and you kind of get caught, you know.
The devilish.
Yeah. It's like, oh, I know I'm not supposed to do this. And then you see that maybe you did hurt somebody's feelings by your actions and you have a good, strong moral code, you're likely to then feel some guilt mm-hmm. in that moment. Uh-oh, I did something wrong. I better think twice about doing that again, because there's consequences that I don't feel good about. But it's not that behavior emanated from something about me that's bad and wrong.
Right.
So I actually grew up with a tremendous amount of shame. I had a very, very, very shaming family.
Wow.
And probably it had a lot to do with how they were raised.
Yes.
I mean, you know, and what did mm-hmm. they say? Like, spare the rod, spoil the child. I mean, it's like almost like you look at your child as this is something about you. People say, shame on you. You should be ashamed of yourself. Yeah. Like, oh my goodness. Like, somehow that's going to dictate better behavior in a child. I don't think that most parents, my parents included, meant to try to make me feel bad about myself. In fact, they wanted me to feel good about myself by doing good things.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not the way it came out.
And so what do you mean? Like, you would do something and sort of the look that they would give you and just sort
of that it wasn't about my behavior. It was clearly something was wrong with me as a human. Something was wrong with me as a person.
Yeah.
And that's sort of my self-worth was worthless, basically. I didn't have much self-worth because I didn't grow up believing that I, on my own merit, was a good person.
Yeah.
And so I struggled with that a lot. And, you know, there's so many ailments and self-destructive behavior that come out of shame.
Oh, it's hard. It's like, it hurts me when I hear these stories. Yeah. It's like, I have so much compassion because it's like, you know, you were this innocent little child. And so it's like, there's so many people out there with that same experience where they did nothing wrong. And then they grow up with sort of this guise that they're just not good enough. It's horrible.
And society also can be a very shaming element to how we grow up and how we develop as well. Because you and I have both disclosed that we struggled with eating disorder, body image issues. Well, basically having a body image issue is a shame issue.
Yes.
It's basically saying that my body is inadequate as it is and must be changed in order for me to love it.
Very tough.
Right, that's basically yes. the seed of all eating disorders, body image issues, things mm-hmm. like that, is that something's wrong with my body. Something's wrong with me.
Yeah. Right? I'm not so good enough. Yeah.
And, you know, drug addiction at the core of that is often shame issues. You know, somebody who just can't, has to anesthetize themselves just to get away from who they perceive themselves to be,
mm-hmm.
you know?
So would you be as bold to say like 99% of shame is really based in childhood? Or do you think it's less than that? Like, could somebody sort of have a fine foundation growing up and then kind of later in life develop? You know what I'm saying?
I certainly think that our self-confidence and our self-value can wither away if mm-hmm. we do behave badly over right. and over and over again, and we start losing favor with people who we care about, and yeah. we get shunned, so to speak.
Sure.
That can certainly induce a temporary state of shame, or yeah. can actually over time. I mean, I think if you put anybody in a chronic situation where it's the absence of all love and nurturance mm-hmm. and acceptance and acknowledgement of who we are, that we are yeah. likely to start sort of fading in
sure.
our own minds about who we are and what we can provide, or being in an abusive relationship, you know, in adulthood,
yeah.
that can certainly create
sure.
an amazing amount of shame.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, you know, one of our emails that we got talks a lot about this, so maybe we should go ahead and read that one.
Sure. And in the meantime, let me throw out the phone number
sure.
again. Well, I'm not really throwing it out. I'm actually giving it to you because we don't want to throw it out. We want you to keep it. Okay. So give us a call, please, at 323-203-0815, 323-203-0815. And if you just tuned in, you're listening to Dr. Deborah and Coach Kelly. And today we're kind of highlighting shame and what that looks like.
Yes.
Who
okay.
has it? And do yeah. we all have it?
Right.
Yeah.
Sure.
Which email?
So email number two, I think, makes
Perfect.
Sense. Dear hosts, I know your topic is on shame today. I have so much shame about an issue I have buried, but feel the need to talk about it.
Wait, hold on. I love that. Did you just say buried?
Buried. Buried.
Is this a Maryland thing?
You know what? It's so funny. I don't even know why I said it like that. I normally don't, but I just rolled off the tongue. Buried.
Now, see, I'm teasing you right now. I'm not shaming you.
There's a difference.
My
husband teases me all the time. I'm like, stop teasing me. I hate it. It's so funny.
But could you imagine, though, if you suffered from shame and
yes.
if I tease you or somebody teases you and you take that to,
yes.
I just, something's wrong with me. I don't know how to speak. I'm defective.
Yes.
I'm this. I'm that. It's
yes.
just so powerful.
You're so much more self-conscious.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I was just teasing you.
Sure.
Because people used to always tease me about how I say R-O-O-F.
Oh, roof.
Roof.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, that's probably because of my European background.
Oh.
A lot of people say roof.
Roof.
The roof.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Exactly.
Anyway, carry on, please.
Buried. Okay. So I don't know why I said it like that. I have so much shame about an issue I have buried, but feel the need to talk about. I'm from a foreign country, and when I was young, was raped by my stepdad. I moved to the States a few years later, but realized since that incident, I gained a tremendous amount of weight. At first, I thought it was because of the food in America, but now seeing it's clearly a deeper issue because it's been almost 10 years since the incident, and I'm still gaining. I really want to lose the weight, but just can't. I'm in a molestation rape group, and I'm learning it's protection for me because I never want something like that to happen to me again. But what can I do to release this shame about what happened and my weight? Signed, Shameful.
You know, this always makes me so, so, so sad, because when somebody feels ashamed about something that happened to them,
mm-hmm.
where they had no responsibility, they had no causation in what occurred, and to carry that around, it's just so painful.
It's unfair. It's like it just doesn't feel fair.
So to me, that's the very first step, is to
yeah.
really do almost a sort of a cognitive awareness of where we put responsibility. And so if she's carrying that sense of responsibility, that's going to be the block for her to be able to feel better. Because shame is actually a state of being that prohibits us from actually living in the moment with how we feel and think. Shame is like a wash, it's like a whitewash that comes over and takes over
uh-huh.
and paralyzes perception and paralyzes
yes.
our ability to deal with what's really in front of us.
It's like beer goggles,
yeah.
but the bad kind.
But the bad kind.
Exactly, yeah.
So, you know, shameful needs to really work on that shame. I mean, what a perfect email for us
yeah.
for today. What about you? What are you thinking?
God, that kills me too. I mean, I'm happy that she's in a molestation rape group, so she knows that she's not alone and she can keep building awareness. I mean, I think when I read this, my first thought was like, I want her to be kind and gentle to herself. Mm-hmm. Kind of like what you were saying, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, I feel like it's not going to help if she's, you know, getting so upset about her weight and sort of feeling so insecure. And so for me, it's just really accepting who she is right now. I mean, clearly she realizes that she's got to do some work around this, but I think just accepting who she is and saying, it's okay, I'm at this weight right now. You know, and the more that she learns and the more that she heals, maybe things will change on that front. But right now, I think it's being okay with who she is.
I agree, absolutely. And trying to break that connection between believing, because sometimes we create little fantasies in our minds too, like somehow this could never happen again because I have extra weight. But really, yeah. The weight is irrelevant in a rape situation.
That's very true.
You know,
true.
It's not necessarily that somebody gets raped because they're thin.
Right.
And somebody who's overweight doesn't. It's
yes.
really a false sense of protection.
Wow.
And it puts a lot of power in something that really doesn't have the ability to actually create what it is that mm-hmm. we're giving it power over.
Sure.
And so I feel sad because that is so common, actually, having worked yeah. so much with, I've too have been raped. Several times in teenage years,
okay.
and the sort of the ways we try to process that mm-hmm. is sometimes just out in left field. It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
But we're trying so desperately to come up with something that makes us feel better.
Right. Well, I was just going to say, obviously, this is a comfort for her. So, I mean, if she wants, you know, if she's really wants to move on to the kind of the next step of helping herself, I think, you know, maybe just even being aware of that eating when she doesn't want to, when she really needs something else and trying to replace it. So if she feels like she's emotionally eating, you know, just really replacing it with another healthy behavior. You know, if she feels like, you know, gosh, I'm so upset right now, or I'm so lonely. It's, you know, it's calling a friend. It's taking a bath. It's just replacing it with new behaviors, I think.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And really just recognizing that sense of responsibility. You know, in EMDR, which is eye movement desensitization reprocessing, a tool for trauma people, mm-hmm. it's that certain belief systems get linked to the event, and it's trying to navigate through those belief systems to shake those up so that mm-hmm. you can have a different experience, a different memory and experience than what she's holding on to. Because right now she's seeing this from the traumatized
perspective,
which I think we're assuming here that she was a child when her stepdad mm-hmm. raped her. I think it would be a slightly different scenario if
Later
she
on.
Was an adult woman. But even children who are rather precocious or seductive.
Yeah.
You know, they will tend to blame themselves for things that happen. But a child is a child. And you look toward your caregivers to supply you with right and wrong, to supply you with role modeling behavior that helps you become a trusting and successful and nourished adult.
Right,
so he's the one who betrayed all
exactly.
of those things. Shame on him.
Completely. It has nothing to do with the child. Oh, it is really hard. And I've heard that too, where people are like, well, if I didn't dress that way, or if I, you know, I was flirting back. And it's like, no, but you're still a child and you don't know. But the adult knows.
The adult knows.
Oh, it's very tough.
Very tough. Oh, absolutely. So I'm so honored that she would actually write to us
yes.
with the secret and be able to share about that.
Sure.
Because that's brave in and of itself. So maybe that may be the first step also toward being
recognizing
able to
that, yeah.
recover from this, you know? And the past is the past, right? And we have a hard
yes.
time, I think, as humans, sometimes letting the past be the past. That's not happening now.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as it's not happening now, living our lives in a moment that's already occurred
yes.
just cheats us out of life. Then we live in regret, and then regret begets more regret. And oh, yeah, 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 yeah,
yeah. Right. Yeah, absolutely.
Oh,
and I just wanted to share, too, it's really scary when these things happen. Oh my gosh, this is crazy. So I went to Hebrew school, and my rabbi was a super nice guy, you know, always really liked him. And in fact, when I was getting married, I had called him to see if he could officiate our wedding. And he was busy, he couldn't do it. And about, I don't know, maybe 6 months after that, he was on Dateline, How to Catch a Predator. And there he was. He was online and...
He was the predator?
He was the predator.
Your former...
Rabbi.
Rabbi.
How crazy is that? So it's like you really think you know somebody, and it's really scary that it can be so close to home.
What a sense of betrayal.
It was, I could not believe it. But what was even scarier, I have a crazy story, is that when I was in high school, and this is going to date me a little bit, but back in the day, there wasn't instant messages, but there was a Prodigy. I don't know if you remember that. That was like one of the first online communication where you could kind of chat with somebody. Oh. And my friend had it, and he called me, and he said, hey, he said, you're never going to believe this. He said, I was on Prodigy, and, you know, an older guy had approached me, and so he had asked if I could meet him somewhere. So I knew this was, you know, for my friend, this was a total joke, and he was like, okay, I'll meet you somewhere. So they met at this diner, but he was hiding out, and my rabbi comes in and was looking for him and was sitting down and said, I'll be in a red shirt, or whatever he had described. So my friend calls me and says, I swear, Kelly, it was your rabbi. You know, he was the one on the online, and he tried to meet me at the diner. I'm like, I would not believe him.
Right.
I was like, no, it wasn't. He just happened to be at the diner with a red shirt. But what are you, crazy? You know, so this was, you know, in the late 90s. And so then this comes out that he, you know, had been stalking and, you know, trying to recruit young kids, young boys.
Frightening.
Is that scary?
It, very frightening. Wow. That was. Did you have this deep sense of betrayal?
Completely. Yeah. And it was like scary. And it was like, oh my God, you know, and I started to think like, and I'm usually great at kind of impressions of people, but I was a little kid when I knew him. I mean, you know, so it was like, you know, maybe my cues were up, but I was kind of upset with myself. Like, God, well, I thought he was a nice guy. You know, I just sort of was like, gosh, how did I not see that? But it was crazy. I mean, the whole community was in an uproar.
Wow, that actually reminds me of a story that I'll share as well from my childhood. I'm sorry that you had to go through that, because that's
rough.
Oh, yeah. So just to relate, I'll share a similar story, different but similar in that way, about the sense of betrayal and fear and all of that. So my fifth grade teacher, I won't say his name, but he was he was either really well liked or really hated. You know, but he was considered the cool guy because he drove a VW Bug, and he would let the kids at school paint it. So you could paint it with all these funky colors and all the stuff. And he would, you know, it kind of really was weird, but he would take people home from school, and he would drive them home and give them rides and always make after hours available. So when I finally got this teacher in fifth grade, he one day locked me in the classroom, forced me to sit on his lap and give him a kiss. And of course, I was terrified to say this to anybody. So in my own little way of trying to right the wrong, I started watching all of the negative behaviors that he had with other kids, and I would start secretly reporting him to the principal, hoping that he would get fired, which they didn't take me seriously because, you know, he was the man.
He was admired.
One, right? So, I mean, I had to endure that whole year, and then he would, like, if he thought that I was, you know, like onto him, or I was going to say something, he would threaten me, and he would like kind of, you know, he'd make me really afraid.
Oh my
I was like
God.
A hostage in fifth grade. So it was terrible. So at the end, I learned how to sort of play nice, right?
Yeah.
Because I was scared, but I also didn't want to be pegged as a troublemaker, because he made people's lives really bad. He once took a saw in the classroom where somebody had mouthed off to him, and he pulled the saw back and slapped it on the kid's back and told the whole classroom, if anybody says anything, they have to deal with him.
That was
horrible.
This is frightening.
So at the end of sixth grade, because middle school didn't start till seventh grade when I was going, at the end of sixth grade, he came to me and he says, you know, you're one of my favorite students, and I want you to promise me that you'll come back every year for the rest of your development and say hello to me. And I'm like, oh my God, this is so creepy. This is so creepy.
Even that term, the rest of your development.
Right. So I never said a word. I never told my parents. I carried on. And then he got fired from that school. But then I saw a newspaper article where he had been arrested for multiple counts of child molestation. So somewhere in time, somebody had the nerve to start outing him.
Good.
And
oh,
it was
God.
Like that moment, it was such a relief for me, even though I didn't get the vindication or I didn't get that experience. Yeah. It was like, wow, because I carried shame about that. I carried a sense that I had. It was something about me that prompted him to have that kind of behavior, even though I knew it was wrong and I knew, you know, but it was crazy, you know,
so. It's frightening.
Yeah.
What is it with fifth grade teachers? Because mine was a little weird too.
Really?
Yes. He would, it was so weird. He would massage the girl's shoulders. Uh-oh. And we always wondered, like, is he looking to see if we're wearing a bra? Like, we were all trying to figure out, but just kind of creepy.
And it's kind of creepy. That's super creepy.
Very creepy. And it was like, it's amazing to me that at that young age, you know, we have that awareness to know something's not right here. Mm-hmm. Something doesn't feel right. It's like that, you know, it's like you know, and I think especially when you're a kid, you're really in tune with that feeling in your body that this doesn't feel right. And I think, like, almost as an adult, you can kind of dismiss it a lot because mm-hmm. you can get in your head. But I think even as a kid, it's like, it's really profound. It's like, it's just, you just feel kind of queasy and you just don't feel right. And so, yeah, I remember having that sense, like, this just, it, something's not, you know, kosher here. It's creepy.
And the probably the worst vicious cycle of all is that predators have a keen eye. They are shameless.
Yes.
Right? So predators are those who should have shame and have none. Mm-hmm. And people like myself, like you, like, you know, people, good people,
right.
who really are good people and sometimes occasionally do not such good things,
sure.
feel sometimes way, way too much shame. Predators have they have like a sixth sense of knowing how to select those who tend to be more vulnerable to that, because then they're less likely to tell.
Right.
They're less likely to make noise about it because they're more easily victimized
right.
in that sense. Now,
right.
I say that with a tremendous amount of caution, because if you are listening and you do struggle with shame, this is mm-hmm. not your fault.
Right, exactly.
Okay, it's not that something's right. wrong with you, but you are yeah. carrying around a burden
yeah.
that needs to be lifted, because it will not serve you well in your life.
Yes.
You know, a little bit of shame keeps us humble, keeps us civil, keeps
right.
us connected to society.
Sure.
So that we're kind of aware of other people's feelings, et cetera, yeah. and that we're not God and we're not over the top of
right.
knowing all righteousness and all that about
yeah.
everybody's lives and stuff. We're not better or worse,
right.
but we are equally
yeah.
entitled to our fair share of space, breathing, air, food, all of those things.
Sure.
You know, if you just tuned in, you're listening to Dr. Deborah
and Coach Kelly.
And please give us a call anytime during the show, 323-203-0815. Again, 323-203-0815. You can always email us. Should we go on to another?
Yes,
email?
But I wanted to say one thing before
yeah,
we moved on.
Of course.
When you were talking about this teacher being really admired and people being scared, it kind of reminds me of the Bill Cosby situation.
Dear. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And I think
yes.
so many of the women said that they said they really wanted to report something and they were so scared because here's the guy who is, you know, the king of comedy who was so admired and, oh, it breaks my heart.
Room 222, was that his show? Do you remember that?
Oh, I don't remember that. I just remember the Cosby Show.
Cosby Show, yeah. He
yeah.
had a lot of television stuff, yeah.
Fat Albert,
yeah.
all of those. I mean, he was so admired. I mean,
absolutely.
You know, and so I think it is so hard to sort of be the one to go against the grain and say, oh, hey, you know what? He's not such a great guy or, you know, wow.
I mean, many people like that we could talk
yes.
about, but we'll probably
that's an
err on the side of caution about
yeah, exactly.
naming too many names.
Sure.
But certainly there are several others out there.
Right.
And there, you know, there's a fair amount of narcissism also that goes
of those
along
people.
With predators.
It makes
because,
total sense.
Because they really do believe that they are more special and more
entitled to do
whatever
this.
They want, whenever
oh.
they want it,
oh my
from
God.
Whomever.
This is
it's
sick.
Awful. Absolutely awful. Okay, which one should we go with next?
Sure. You want to do number one?
Okay. Dear host, I love your show. Thank you. We love you listening. I've been too shy to call, so I'm emailing. Perfect. All
exactly.
right, here we go. My husband has gained over 20 pounds, and I'm completely turned off. I don't consider myself a shallow person, but I just do not feel attracted to him like I did when he was normal weight. He doesn't have a medical issue. He has just become lazy, and working out has become less of a priority. He's upset because I don't want to have intercourse and has asked me what's wrong. I don't have the heart to tell him it's because I'm not attracted because of his weight gain. What do you think I should say? Signed, a weighty issue. Well,
wow.
Shall I go first?
Sure.
Okay. First thing is, I think sometimes we do focus on a tangible, like weight gain, as mm-hmm. describing a loss of attraction. But I think it's also important to look at whether the loss of attraction has come about from his laziness. So
oh.
if he's become a person who she would not have been attracted to and focusing mm-hmm. on the weight, then obviously it's not necessarily the issue. So I would actually say that the best thing to do is say something like, I really enjoyed it when our lives were more active, when we did more things together, where we played together. We were in better shape. We did, we had more fun because we could enjoy life that way. And it seems to me that just telling her husband that the weight gain has actually affected your vibrancy, your aliveness. And that is causing me to be withdrawn and not as attracted.
That
and I think
makes sense.
It's a sort of a gentle way. And I really don't think it will all be about the weight.
Right.
I mean, it might be.
But sure.
She says
but
she's
might be
not.
But it does. It changes somebody's persona. If he's if he was determined and motivated and then kind of became lazy, it is a turnoff. I can completely get that.
Yeah,
really good point.
She does say she doesn't consider herself a shallow person. So my guess is that it's beyond just the weight thing.
Yes.
It's also, you know, we think so much about people's feelings that somehow our words are so powerful that we will hurt somebody. And clearly that's true, right? Clearly we can say things in such a mean and ugly way that it is just very damaging to somebody's sense of self-worth.
Fat.
Right.
Yeah.
You're fat, you know, but hey, fatso,
exactly.
Get off the couch.
Yeah.
You piece of
sloth.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
Right. So if you can actually though, turn that into something that would be motivating, and to really be able to say, like, you can say the words, I think, look, honey, you've gained some weight. And for some reason, it seems to be affecting who you are. And it's causing then an effect on me. So rather than focusing on losing the weight, let's focus on being more active.
Right. I think that makes sense. I mean, aside from her getting on the couch and just eating bonbons with him, I think the other, I think the other option is, I mean, I like that also. And I think if he probes further and he says, you know, well, are you not attracted to me because of my weight? I think then that's her perfect opportunity to then be honest.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think it's so important to be honest. I mean, I'm sure he's aware of the weight gain.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I think that rather him worrying that she's, you know, met somebody else or there's another issue because, you know, obviously she says, he's concerned because I don't want to have intercourse. I mean, I think that he's sort of getting at it. I mean, he's asking. I think she needs to be honest and also say that. So I love your advice first. And then if it goes further, then really being straight up about it.
Probably also important for her to explore with him, right? Sit down and say, hey,
what's going on?
There's something going on between us, right?
Yes.
I don't want to have sex with you and you're unhappy about it. So what is the weight gain about? I
mean, exactly.
Like you said, he's going to be aware that he's gained weight, right? So
exactly.
It's not like it's just the elephant in the room anyway, no pun intended there. But maybe it's a small elephant.
Exactly, but he needs to.
But so saying, hey, maybe he's depressed.
Right.
Maybe that's causing him to be lazy and, you know, less of a priority. Maybe he's stressed out about something.
Sure.
Maybe there's something he's not communicating that he's unaware of. So again, the waking is a symptom generally of something else. And it's important in relationships to be able to non-shamingly address what it is that you see in each other that is or isn't working in the relationship.
Yep. I 100% agree. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're listening to Dr. Deborah and Coach Kelly. Our phone number is 323-203-0815. Today's topic is about shame, but feel free to call about anything.
So I had a relationship a while back. I was, in my early 30s.
Okay.
And I was still carrying a lot of shame. I mean, I don't think that I really healed from my shame stuff until well into my mid to late 30s. And then I took a lot of therapy and a lot of self-growth and a lot of just being willing to let that go, you know, and learning about it. You know, I mean, the process started way earlier, but where I could really honestly say, it's okay. Like, so I so less frequently get embarrassed because embarrassment is a word that a lot of people relate to more than shame.
Yes.
But embarrassment is basically, you know, you're publicly exposed in a way that you perceive yourself to not be in a favorable light in other people's eyes. Anyway, in this relationship, so many of the conflicts that occurred were because of my shame. You know, didn't know how to really call it that way, but the conflicts really occurred.
Wow.
He would say to me, he said, you know, I really care about you. You're such a wonderful, beautiful lady. You're intelligent. You have all this stuff. But being with you is like living in a house that has these massive potholes, and you never know when you're going to step on one and fall into this this deep tunnel where there's no way out. And that like really hit hard for me because he said it in a really nurturing way. It was not meant to be. He was not shaming me on top of my shame. He was basically saying that it was this like vacuum that like no matter what he would do in that moment, there was no way out because I couldn't get over feeling like I was bad.
Yes.
That I was, and then how do you convince somebody who believes that they're bad that they're not bad?
Exactly.
It's very hard.
Yeah.
The worst, though, too, is have you ever met anybody, though, you just know they're carrying a bundle of shame, but they're so guarded and so almost like a narcissist that is so pigheaded and big-headed and just believes that they are, but that's really covering a very, very, very deep sense of,
insecurity.
A defense mechanism.
100%.
Those are the hardest people to penetrate because they won't acknowledge that they're actually ashamed.
They've got shame about the shame.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So they can't say it. So, you know, they actually become very needy people in relationships.
Oh.
You know, the people who wear their shame on their sleeves versus, and you know what you're dealing with, versus those who have this protective gear and you're like pounding on it, going, let's just get into the shame, get through it, get over it, come out the other side.
Exactly.
But it's so hard to get through.
This is so interesting. So that's really healing, though. I'm glad he said that because I'm sure it was very eye-opening.
I never forgot it, right?
Yeah.
I'm talking about it now because
it
really stuck with me. It's like, wow, so I would be somebody who's actually hard to be in a relationship with, you know? So I often looked at other people like, well, that guy's a schmuck, and that one's an asshole, and that one's an abuser, and that one's this, but what am I? Well, I'm a shame junkie, so to speak, that you know, gets mired in my own self-badness attacks.
Well, I was just going to say, so it sounds like in the conflict, it was like when he would tell you if something had happened, some behavior you had done, you would immediately take it in as, oh my God, I'm a bad person.
Yes. And that's what was so challenging because, you know, that he wasn't his intention at all.
Right.
So then I would also be angry with him for perceiving me that way. But it was true.
Exactly.
You know, it's like once I could take responsibility for that and say, oh, I have to work through that because otherwise I am going to be a pain in the ass to be in a relationship with.
Yes.
I still am a pain in the ass to be in a
relationship. Are we all? We're all pain in the asses.
Absolutely. If you just tuned in, you're listening to Dr. Deborah.
And Coach Kelly.
And we would love for you to give us a call anytime at 323-203-0815. Again, 323-203-0815. How about we read number three?
Sure.
Dear Dr. Deborah and Coach Kelly, how do you know if someone is being friendly or out of line? I'm female, 43, and happily married 9 years. My single heterosexual male neighbor, also in his 40s, is very friendly with me. He asked me to go walking or to get coffee many times. I've politely turned him down, but whenever he sees me, he rushes over and we end up chatting. I don't have an interest, but think he may have. On the other hand, am I being overly sensitive and could he just be a friendly guy? Signed, Neighborly Love.
Ooh.
That's always a tough one.
Very tough.
Very tough.
Well, and I can relate because I'm very friendly and I'm always wondering, are people thinking I'm giving off, you know, this flirtatious, you know, I have an interest
you
vibe?
You are not friendly.
No?
No. On a scale of 1 to 10, only about a 12 and a half.
It's so my husband always says, because he's shy and he always talks about how I won friendliest in high school at a big high school. And he thinks it's like the biggest deal. And I'm like, really? But then I realize that. I think I, you know, now I've met more people over the years. And I'm like, oh my God, I must be pretty friendly because everybody else seems a little bit more reserved and sort of standoffish at moments. But anyway, I do worry about that because I can be really friendly and I'm always thinking like, oh my God, are they thinking that I have an interest or, you know, but I really genuinely love people and I love chatting with people. So it's a tough call.
And my guess is you are as friendly around your husband as you are when he's not around. I mean, you're just a friendly person.
Totally.
There's some people that you got to wonder because they like tone it down when they're in their relationship, but they really are trying to get a lot of maybe acknowledgement or accolades from other people, so they kind of bump it up out in the world.
Yes.
And that can be a challenge in a relationship. But I mean, in this situation, it sounds like, you know, she could just ask.
Ooh,
she could just
simply
say, hey, you know what? I don't want to get the wrong impression here, and I'm assuming you're just being friendly, but I just want to make sure that you know that I'm happily married and I'm in a good relationship, and as long as this is just purely from platonic intentions,
then I'm on board.
I'm
good.
If not, look, I don't want to lead you on, and I don't want, you know, I think I'd approach it that way.
That's really bold. I like that very much.
I think it's also important to ask the husband how he feels about their friendship.
I was going to say that.
Is he threatened at all?
Exactly. Is he okay with it? Well, that was going to be my next question to you is how do you feel about married men or women going out, hiking, coffee with a
divorcee, somebody, you know, as a friend, kind of a new, quote unquote, new friend?
That's always the tricky part. If it's a new friend and it's and somebody's heterosexual and it's the opposite gender,
yes.
then I say proceed with caution and mm-hmm. make sure that your relationship is really strong
yes.
and make sure that you really have done like a scan internally of your yes. own intentions.
Exactly.
Because sometimes people aren't really interested in leading somebody on or being attracted to mm-hmm. them, but they like the attraction
yes.
from the other side,
sure.
which can also be a slippery slope.
An ego boost, so
yeah.
to speak. Yeah.
But not so healthy for the relationship.
Of course. Yeah.
How about you? How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I'm in agreement too. And I think also asking the partner, because I think a lot of times you can feel that guilt. Oh my God, what if my partner's going to think? And you know, you can kind of like create this internal crazy dialogue, but you just got to involve your partner. And I think there might be some relief in that. You know, if they say, well, I'm not really comfortable, then you have your answer. If they're like, well, you know, I'm okay with it, then I think, again, you sort of can proceed with caution, but at least you know on their end, it's okay. They're aware of it. It's not so secretive. It's not like, who is this person you're going out with? You know, they're aware of it.
Isn't it always fun too when you start to realize your own double standards? Like
yes.
for me, I have male friends that I've had for a long time.
Sure.
And they are absolutely purely platonic. And some of them have been interested in me, and I've made a very yeah. clear message that I'm not at all interested in them, but
right.
I do enjoy the friendship. And I would be like heartbroken in many ways if my guy was saying, like, you can't do that, because I know yes. that it's totally clean, it's
sure.
totally innocent. So my modification to that is like, okay, but I want you to really get to know this person then.
Yes.
So, like, make it safe. It's part, this person mm-hmm. now is going to become part of our relationship. So it's a friend for you as well.
Yes.
You know, and that usually tends to soften
break the
it
ice.
Up. But I got to tell you, when the flip side happens, like, if my guy wants to go hang out and do fun,
yeah.
he's like, wait, what am I, chop liver?
Exactly,
I want to go.
Exactly.
I want to do it. Wait, don't do that. Don't
yes.
have fun with somebody else. So I have a little bit of a double standard.
Of course.
For sure.
It's very hard. It's really, really hard. I think that's natural, of course.
And maybe that's really a sexist thing that I have going on. Like, I mean, historically, uh-huh. right, it's men who tend to pursue women.
Yeah.
Right? So I can mm-hmm. trust me not to pursue somebody.
Right.
But what about my guy? Like, can I really trust him? Not
exactly.
To
pursue, sure.
You know, remember that movie When Harry Met Sally?
Yeah.
Their common, the conflict in the whole movie was that men and women cannot be
friends.
Platonic friends.
Yes.
That somebody somewhere in there mm-hmm. always ends up being attracted or has a second interest. So I don't know. I mean, I have been able to be
yeah.
platonic friends with guys for many years, like
exactly.
decades.
Yes.
So I think it's possible. But
so,
it really depends on one's intent, like really who you are. You
and
know?
I'm curious if there's any listeners out there who want to weigh in on this debate. Feel free to give
Please.
Us a call at 323-203-0815. Can men and women be friends? Let's hear it from your perspective.
Yes. And you know what? I think friendly and flirty can often be mixed,
yes,
right, mixed up,
of course,
and hard to distinguish between the two.
Cool.
I mean, it is. I mean,
it's
where do you
tough.
Cross the line between friendly and flirty? I don't know where it is. I think it's also different
yeah.
for different people.
Well, and I think you can also be flirty with having no intention of going farther, just kind of having a little bit of fun, and mm-hmm. then the other person could misinterpret it as you want to take it to the next step.
Sure,
it's very tough.
So good
yeah.
email. Yeah, again, 323-203-0815 is our number. 323-203-0815. And you are listening to Dr. Deborah and Coach Kelly. And today we're talking it out on shame and lots of other things. I mean, shame really is, it is one of the most interesting experiences. Like I said, it's not really a feeling. A
mm-hmm.
lot of people say, I feel shame or
yeah.
I feel embarrassed, but it's really a state of being. You know, that actually
yes.
prohibits us from being able to be alive,
right?
To be fully alive in who we are.
Oh,
so acceptance, right? The flip side of shame is mm-hmm. actually acceptance. Acceptance of I am a cool person.
Yes.
You know, doesn't
I'm all about affirmations, and it's cheesy and make fun if you want, but I think it's great. I think really, you know, it's almost like hypnosis. You had the hypnotherapist on there. It's sort of really starting to train your brain's messages that you are good. You're good enough.
Good enough. And that's always been my favorite
yes.
saying, you know?
Yeah.
And we talked about that in relation to perfectionism, but in
yes.
relation to shame as well. I mean, when we can really honor ourselves as a human being. There's an exercise that I do with women with eating disorders and
mm-hmm.
with men as a body affirming exercise where you
okay.
actually stand in the mirror naked, mm-hmm. which is hard for many
yeah.
people, right? But you got to stand in the mirror naked and you got to look at yourself, and every day you pick a different body part. It can be your cheekbone, it can
mm-hmm.
be your eyes, it can be this, and you start looking at yourself for the functions that all these beautiful gifts of our bodies provide for us. So
mm-hmm.
you start to actually talk to yourself in a loving way. Oh, my fingers, they're long and sleek. Thank you for my fingers, because my fingers allow me to touch things, to feel things, to pick
things up. You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show.
Right. You know what? I don't like it. They're not perfect. You're not the way they're, you know, supposed to have a space here and a space here. But guess what? Those thighs help me to be able to climb that hill, to be able to leap that step, to be able to walk from here to there, to be able to go hug the person that I want to go hug.
Exactly.
Right? Yes. So all those things. So it's a really lovely exercise.
I like that.
Most people really resist it, though, at the beginning.
I'm sure.
It's like, I can't like that part.
Well, of course.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's so easy to go right into the negative. Like, oh, well, you know, I don't like that part. And oh, my God, it's jiggly and cellulite-y. And they can go to that place. Oh, my God. Well, it's so funny. There was I don't know if it's true or not, but there was something I saw on the internet about Cindy Crawford's photo before it was retouched. And, you know, I mean, she's in her 50s now, and, you know, there was just some jiggle going on, and it was hard to see. And it's like, God, it just reminded me of how many pictures are photo touched. And I think it's so hard on girls and men too today, because we really look at those pictures and we think that is the norm, and it's totally not. It's a fabrication. Absolutely. It makes me angry.
Oh,
very tough.
I know. I understand. It's just that. Oh, sometimes we just need to get over ourselves, don't we?
Exactly.
Right? We just put so much pressure on how to be a certain way and to look a certain way and all that. And it just becomes overwhelming
overwhelming.
Many times. Sometimes I actually am one of those people who often just turns off the TV and never looks at magazines and just carries on along my day, because I don't want to be bombarded by that. It caused so much pain in my younger life to be always. I couldn't even walk by a Victoria's Secret store without having anxiety that if I didn't look like that person in the picture, it literally would cause me anxiety. Actually, I had to go to trauma therapy for that, because I couldn't like live in my own skin.
Yeah,
because I was raised with so much focus on exterior looks.
Yes,
like my parents, never did they have anything they would say. That was the worst English ever. I'm sorry. let me correct myself. I'm not shaming myself. I simply am correcting that they were so obsessed with stuff, I guess, because of their histories and war and all that stuff, and how, you know, wanting to fit in, right? Being immigrants and wanting to fit in. But every time they would talk about anybody, it was always the lead in was that beautiful.
Yes.
That gorgeous, that loving, that ugly, that this is like, so you grow up thinking, well, that's what matters, right? Only matters is what you look like. So what, somehow, if you don't have Cindy Crawford's earlier physique, that you don't deserve to be in a swimsuit? Why not?
Exactly.
Who the hell determines that anyway? It's all arbitrary, right?
Yes.
40 years ago, thin was in, and then Zoftic and voluptuous.
Exactly.
So, you know, you can't win.
You cannot win.
Absolutely. Oh, my goodness. Well, that was a lot, huh?
I know, exactly.
It's one of my favorite topics, really, because it is... what do they say? Some things are the root of all evil. Shame is really, it's not a healthy thing. It really leads to so much challenge.
Yeah. And like you were saying, in relationships, especially.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So maybe some tips for our listeners.
Sure.
If you struggle with shame, or if you know somebody who struggles with shame. I think in relationships, if you are with somebody who no matter what you say, they always go to that bad place, you know, that maybe you could just highlight for them that maybe they're, you know, being pretty self-destructive by carrying around that shame. And maybe just, if you learn something today, pointing that out in a loving, nurturing way. And if you're experiencing that, start with Kelly's versions, Coach Kelly's of affirmations. Affirmations are a beautiful thing, because you start treating yourself as though you're worth it.
Yep.
You start feeling it.
And there's also some affirmation cards if you don't feel comfortable doing it yourself. They're a great way too.
It's really hard for people though that are shame-based to even come up with five things that they actually like about themselves. Mm. So another way to start is to ask a friend. Ask five friends. Ask
like
your
that.
Friends. Give me a list of five things that you think make me a cool person. What is it about me that is so lovable?
Yes.
And then starting to fill up your little affirmation bank on a daily basis about something like that.
Yep. I like
and
that.
Fake it till you make it, right? I mean, just because you don't feel it doesn't mean it isn't true.
It's so true.
And it's we can sell ourselves a bag of bull crap, right? Or we could, it's just as easy to believe something positive about yourself.
I like that very much. Yeah. And also, I like to say, take contrary action. So if you don't, you know, if you don't feel good, you don't feel like you're good enough, just do it anyway. Just do the opposite. Just give it a go.
Absolutely. So. Well,
yes.
Yes. Dr. Deborah and Coach Kelly, we so appreciate your listening. Come on, give us some phone calls next time. We really, really enjoy talking to you live. We also love your emails, and we'll have more of those. And Coach Kelly has a website, and she has some fun things there.
Yes, sure. So my book, Professor Kelly's Guide to Finding a Husband, is on Amazon, or you could visit my website at www.kellymiller.com.
And you can also find me at drdebraonline.com, drdebraonline.com. I've got lots of books and downloads and some good blogging that I've been doing, which has been really fun.
Very cool.
I'm really enjoying it. Yeah. I got a lot more to do and learn, but yeah.
Getting there, taking the steps.
So next week, why don't we do something on judgment, criticism? Why are we judgmental? Is it healthy? Is it unhealthy? How do we handle criticisms?
Yes.
Is that up your alley?
Yes, way up there.
You teach me, because I'm terrible at handling criticism.
Really?
Okay. No, actually I'm not. Actually, I really welcome and promote people to give me honest criticism, if it's done in a loving way, just not in a harsh way.
Sure.
All right, once again, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.